Hello, welcome to the Leicester Mercury Talking Newspaper for the week Monday, August the 5th to Saturday, August the 10th. It is produced by Vista. The telephone number 0116 249 8839. The items are read by Marion, Margaret, Eleanor and Mary, and it's recorded by Ian. Now, sunrise and sunset times for the week commencing Monday the 12th. On Tuesday the 13th, sunrise 5:42 a.m. Sunset 8:50 p.m. And we begin. Caribbean celebrations. A colourful carnival marks the proud day for a multicultural city. Exotic sights, sounds and delicious smells brought Leicester to life on Saturday when this year's Caribbean Carnival took place. One of the city's most popular events, the carnival attracts thousands of people annually, both watching the parade go through the city and joining in the celebrations at Victoria Park. This year, the event had a Windrush theme and celebrated Caribbean immigrants' contribution to the economic and cultural development of the United Kingdom. Among the masses of people who joined in the celebrations at the park was Kyle Samuels, aged 32, of Beaumont Leys, with his partner Danielle Thompson and their three children. He said, "I really like the vibe and always see loads of my relatives here. It's a chance to catch up. I've never missed a year since I was a boy, and that's why I like to bring my family along with me to soak up the atmosphere." Danielle said, "We watched the parade in London Road. It was brilliant. I've loved Carnival Day ever since Kyle first brought me down. The children love it too." The MC on the main stage summed up the spirit of the event when he said, "It's for white people, black people, Asian people, young people, old people, straight people, gay people. It's for all people, so get down and have a good time." Carnival Chairman Dennis Sugar Christopher said, "It's been a very good day. I always love the community spirit and am always amazed at how many people from across the city, country and even abroad come along to enjoy the carnival. It's a great example of multicultural Leicester and people of all ages, cultures and backgrounds all joining in and having fun together. It's always a proud day for me and for Leicester."
We must be investing in ways to cut knife crime. It takes a lot of time, expertise, and resources to solve a deep-rooted problem like knife crime. For some young people growing up today, violence has become normalised. Reversing unhealthy attitudes, relationships and patterns of behaviour will not happen overnight. Bridges need to be built and we need to show young people what else they are capable of. For a long time, I've been fighting for the funding to do it, and thankfully, Leicestershire has secured a sizeable chunk this year to make a difference, and there is no denying how desperately it is needed. The Home Office has granted us an extra £1.4 million in 2019-2020 for operational activity and preventative work. With knife-related deaths and injuries across the UK reaching epidemic levels, it is critical we understand the problems and build the infrastructure we need. This one-off investment is among a number of funding boosts received to kickstart our work addressing violence, and already it is being put to good use. We have also secured almost 350,000 from the government's early intervention youth fund to help rehabilitate young people at risk of offending. This is where the real inroads will be made, giving young people the tools they need to support themselves financially, develop career skills, and not be tempted by the lure of violence or crime. It's part of a new public health approach to violence, looking at the social, cultural, and economic reasons behind it, and Leicestershire has provisionally been chosen as one of 18 areas across the country to develop a violence reduction unit, thanks to an £880,000 grant. Work has started to develop this multi-agency hub, which will lead efforts to address the social, economic, and cultural issues which increase the risk of violent behaviour. The key goals will be to reduce hospital admissions related to violence, reduce knife-related serious violence, and reduce non-domestic homicides. Meanwhile, I've invested more than £100,000 from my own budget into community projects which tackle violence and knife crime through diversionary activity, sports and mentorship. We also invested £10,000 in trauma packs to be carried in frontline police cars for emergencies. It is very important to me we learn from our experiences and understand what works. We will be monitoring the outcomes of all the work we undertake to maximise the impact we make on our communities in the future. Although I very much welcome the extra funding we have been lucky to receive, there has to be consistency. We need to sustain our preventative work and maintain the commitment. This will require significant future investment. Knife crime won't end overnight, but change is within sight.
Hospice helpers' bags are labelled with 100% love. Hospice staff say they have been overwhelmed after receiving hundreds of offers from across the country to make bags in which to put patients' belongings after they die. Loros in Leicester made an appeal on Facebook, which reached more than 225,000 people. People were asked to make eco-friendly bags to replace the plastic bags and cardboard boxes used to put belongings in before they were given to their family. Jo Hyde, head of inpatient and day therapy at Loros, said, "We can't believe what a fantastic response we received to our appeal. It really is amazing. We even had to set up a new email address, especially for the responses, because of the huge amount of people getting in touch. It is already such a difficult time for families when a loved one dies, and being able to take belongings home in something a bit nicer than a plastic bag or box will make a difference. From old curtains to pillowcases you are about to throw out, the bags have come in all sorts of shapes and forms. The bags, which can be any size and made from any clean and sturdy material, are also eco-friendly and reusable, which ties in with the greener approach the hospice is trying to take. All among those who have made bags for Loros is schoolgirl Chloe Palmer, who used material given to her for her birthday. Chloe 12 of Odeby has labelled her bags with cardboard hearts which say, "Made with 100% love by Chloe P." She said, "Mum told me about the post and I love to help out charities and getting involved with good causes. I now know lots about Loros too. I'm going to go and make some more this summer." Ms. Hyde said, "We are grateful to those who have already created bags and also those who have donated materials for use to make the bags with. From youngsters to grandparents, and from those who already supported Loris to those who had never even heard of the charity, we have had people get in touch from across the country offering to help us. A lot of people have been asking for a pattern or template, but we are very keen to encourage people to be as creative as they want when producing their bags, because each one of them is unique. And if you would like to make a Loris bag or have some spare material that the hospice could use, email ecobags@loris.co.uk.
Crash pilot had been ferrying dying city fan. The pilot of a helicopter which crashed on takeoff had just returned from a trip flying over King Power Stadium to fulfil the dying wish of a Leicester City fan. Andy Morris had landed the borrowed £300,000 Robinson R-44 aircraft on a field behind his parents' home in Shilton Road, Barwell, near Hinckley, to drop off his passengers after Saturday's trip. But as he tried to take off again, things went badly wrong. Andy, 47, of Stapleton, near Hinckley, had flown terminal cancer sufferer Dave Richardson, 47, of Hinckley, his nephew, 20-year-old Joe Adcock, and Joe's girlfriend, Tia Tomlinson, over the King Power Stadium in an hour-long trip. But when the experienced helicopter pilot tried to take off again, his parents, builder Tony Morris, 78, and his wife Janet, could only watch in horror as the drama unfolded. The passengers, who had just alighted, also sat aghast at what was unfolding. The single rotor aircraft seemed unable to take off before tilting over, scattering bits of rotor and other aircraft parts over a wide area. The group then watched in disbelief as Andy climbed out, apparently unscathed, after crashing through the windscreen in the impact, which tore off the tail section and wrecked the rotor blade. Mum Janet said, "I was just shouting, 'Andy, get out, get out.'" Dad Tony, a well-known local builder and owner of Tony Morris Properties, said, "Can you imagine watching this while your son is in the aircraft with that happening? I've been to church this morning to say thank you for what is nothing less than a miracle." Dave's dying wish was to go up in a helicopter over the King Power Stadium. Andy has held a helicopter pilot's license for 10 years and said he would see what he could do. When they landed and we were sitting round having a glass of orange squash, Dave said it was the best day of his life. Janet said, "Andy got back in the helicopter, did all his safety checks, and the engine was revving up. But the rear end wouldn't lift, and all of a sudden it toppled over. Thankfully, when he got out, there was hardly a scratch on him. He borrowed the helicopter from a friend who has been to see him since and hugged him to say he was glad he survived." Both parents praised the fantastic efforts of the emergency services. Mr. Richardson's mum, Sandra, 74, of Hinckley, said of her son's once-in-a-lifetime trip, "Dave really enjoyed it. He was high as a kite. He was so excited, but he had difficulty sleeping last night after what happened, but he did have a marvellous time." I'm a friend of Andy's mum and dad, and when they heard about Dave's wish, Tony said, "Leave it with me. It's an awful thing to have happened at the end of such a lovely trip."
Man fined for mound of rubbish that kept on growing. The householder ignored warnings to remove heap of black bags. A man who left dozens of bags of rubbish outside his own house has been taken to court after ignoring repeated warnings to get rid of them. Charnwood Borough Council took action against Kevin Rose after complaints that the waste outside his Loughborough home was smelly and unsightly. He was repeatedly told to clear it, but instead stacked up more and more bags of rubbish. Environmental health officers received their first complaint about a huge build-up of waste on the front and side of the privately owned property in Burley Road in September 2018. A Charnwood Council officer visited Rose's home and found there were about 30 bags of waste. A warning letter was sent to Mr. Rose stating the waste needed to be removed. However, by October, more bags of waste had accumulated and community protection notice was issued. The court order required Mr. Rose to remove the waste or face possible prosecution. A month later, a council officer visited the property again to find the number of rubbish-filled black bags had increased to about 50. The council was forced to remove the waste at a cost of £117, by which time the pile of bags had grown to about 80. The council then brought the prosecution against Mr. Rose for breaching the community protection notice. He did not enter a plea. Leicester magistrates fined him £440 for breaching the notice, ordered him to pay £440 cost to the council and a £44 victim surcharge. Following the hearing, the council's lead member for regulatory services, Councillor Margaret Smidowitz, said people need to take responsibility for their own waste and ensure that it is disposed of properly. We tried to engage with Mr. Rose on several occasions and gave him plenty of time to remove the waste before issuing the notice. Leaving waste to build up on the front of your property is not acceptable. Not only is it unsightly, but it can present risks to people's health.
Harry's dying wish fulfilled as ashes scattered on Alps. A man who wed his sweetheart in a last-minute ceremony in hospital has had his dying wish fulfilled, as his ashes have been scattered on Mont Blanc in France. Harry Pell married fiancée Beverly Saxton, 56, at Leicester General Hospital in January, in a ceremony organised by staff. Shortly after the wedding, Harry, who was 69, died. The couple, who got together in 2013, planned on getting married later in the year, but moved the wedding forward after Harry's admittance to hospital shortly before Christmas. The ceremony was planned and put together in just 48 hours for the couple by transforming a day room on Ward 20 into a makeshift wedding venue. Speaking at the time of the wedding, Beverly said, "The staff have been amazing. It has been above and beyond what they did for us. The room was beautiful." Attending the wedding were some of Harry and Beverly's friends from Hinckley Mountaineering Club, of which Harry was a former member and club president. Now, to honour Harry's dying wish, four members of the club have scattered his ashes on the highest peak in the French Alps, Mont Blanc. The climb was led by pal Kevin Turner, who had climbed the mountain with Harry 20 years ago and wore Harry's old walking boots on his latest climb. The other climbers were Alison Hardy, Elvin Haig and Chris Gardner. Hinckley Mountaineering Club President Ted Cottrell said, "Harry was an inspiration to all club members, always willing to take newcomers under his wing and giving them the opportunities to climb on rock and especially snow and ice. Memories they will always keep." For the wedding, staff on Ward 20 and 23 made the decorations for the event and brought in items from their own homes to turn the space into a room fit for the ceremony. The hospital and staff provided a red carpet whilst decorations and homemade cupcakes were brought in for guests to enjoy. Julie Godrich, sister on Ward 20 at the hospital, said in January, "I'm so proud of everyone who took part in organising the wedding. It was a joint effort by lots of different staff all over the hospital."
Thief defied ban and was caught with a break-in kit. A persistent thief has been jailed after he was caught breaking the terms of a court order which was imposed to bring him under control. The 5-year criminal behaviour order, CBO, prohibits Christopher Stevens from entering specific areas of the city, deliberately touching, entering, or attempting to enter any vehicle without the owner's permission, or being in possession of a hammer. The 31-year-old of no fixed address was arrested on Saturday, June the 29th, when police officers saw him inside a fast food restaurant in Market Street, Leicester. In a statement, Leicestershire Police said, "On the way into custody, Stevens, who had items including a glass hammer, a crowbar, pliers and a balaclava in his bag, made an admission to the officers that he knew he had breached the conditions of his CBO. Stevens was issued with a CBO as a result of his prolific offending, and it came into effect following a period of imprisonment in August 2016, when he was jailed for 32 months for a series of offences, including burglary, theft from motor vehicles and criminal damage. Inspector Adam Archer, Commander of City Centre Police, said, "CBOs are imposed for a reason, including to protect communities, and any breach of them is taken extremely seriously. Strict conditions are placed on an individual issued with a CBO, and anyone not adhering to these conditions could face being fined or imprisoned for up to 4 years. Stevens knowingly breached the conditions of his CBO, and he only has himself to blame as he faces the consequences of that decision. He appeared at Leicester Crown Court last week for sentencing. He was jailed for 15 months for breaching the conditions of the CBO and for the offence of going equipped to steal. The order remains in place until August 2021.
Blaze teen hero leads sister and grandparents to safety. A teenager kept a cool head when fire engulfed his grandparents' home while he and his sister were visiting them. Joshwin Patel was upstairs with his sister Sion at their grandparents' Belgrave home when Sion noticed a glow of light coming from one of the first floor bedrooms. Realising there was a fire, Joshwin immediately got his grandfather, Hasmuk, 68, and 69-year-old grandmother, Tara, who was at prayer in the house, out of the terraced property, which was by now filling with smoke. Mrs. Patel and Sion were taken in two ambulances to Glenfield Hospital after suffering what Joshwin described as panic attacks. The fire broke out in Kensington Street on Friday afternoon. Joshwin, 13, of Rushy Mead, said, "It was about 5:45 p.m. I was upstairs when my sister spotted a glow of light close to the window in one of the bedrooms. I immediately called the fire brigade and got my sister, grandma and granddad out of the house. Three fire engines and an ambulance arrived quickly." Joshwin, who visits his grandparents at their Kensington Street home with his 14-year-old sister every weekend, added, "When we exited the house, there was a lot of smoke coming from it. One of the windows blew in and there were a lot of flames as well. The flames spread at least 10 metres from the back of the upstairs to the front bedroom window. I'm just thankful I was able to get my grandma, granddad and sister out okay." The couple's next door neighbour said, "I was just about to sit down and watch TV when I heard all this commotion outside. I looked out and saw all these fire engines and the family who lived there were outside in the street.
The next thing was I got a knock on the door to evacuate, and we were out for a couple of hours. The blackened front window of the two-story home bore testament to the ferocity of the blaze, which was tackled by firefighters in four appliances from the city's central and eastern fire stations. Onlookers gathered at either end of the cordon to watch the firefighting operation. The county-bound lane of Belgrave Road was completely blocked at the start of the firefighting operation, causing delays to drivers before one lane was reopened. I'm just thankful I was able to get my grandma, granddad and sister out okay. 13-year-old Joshua Purtell.
Didn't say what caused it.
Oldest cadet meets youngest. Sprightly 93-year-old Ken Muddimer has staked his claim as the oldest surviving air cadet. He is certainly the oldest known ex-cadet from Leicester's No. 1 Founder Squadron. Ken had already spent almost 2 years as a cadet in the Air Defence Cadet Corps, ADCC, when the ADCC changed to become the Air Training Corps in February 1941. He became a cadet in the country's first squadron, No. 1, City of Leicester. After finishing his cadet service, Ken became a member of the Royal Air Force Volunteer Reserve, training as a flight engineer. He eventually joined the Army, spending 4 years with them. "I loved every minute of it," said Ken. 80 years after becoming a cadet, Ken paid a visit to his old squadron recently. After recounting his cadet stories with the present commanding officer, Flight Lieutenant Emily Kenyon, Ken met the squadron's youngest cadet, Josh Carvel. Josh has been a cadet for a year and said, "There are so many opportunities in the air cadets, and I've learned such a lot. Meeting with a cadet from so long ago was unbelievable." Ken was presented with a squadron shield to commemorate his visit and said, "It's been a fantastic evening, which has brought back many memories."
Virtual museum launches. The world's first Anglo-Sikh virtual museum will be launched this week. Members of the public will be able to experience relics and artefacts on Sikh and British history using virtual reality and 3D technology. The Heritage Lottery-funded initiative will include many objects that have never been on public display from both museums and private collections. They include some from the Sikh Empire and the court of Maharaja Ranjit Singh, born 1780, died 1839, through to his granddaughter, the suffragette, Princess Sophia Duleep Singh, born 1876, died 1948. New objects will be added, culminating in a full interactive 3D Sikh online museum next year. The launch event at New Walk Museum in Leicester on Thursday will feature a panel discussion featuring guest speakers that will explore the importance of preserving Anglo-Sikh history through new technologies. Gurinder Singh Mann, head of the Sikh Museum Initiative, said, "Those attending will get a chance to see how new technologies can help in the understanding of history and heritage. The team has been working for several years to uncover Sikh relics and artefacts in the UK. With support from the National Lottery Heritage Fund, we can now release the world's first Sikh online museum. This website will bring many hidden and unseen items of historical and cultural importance to the forefront. This will be available for all to see in an easy and accessible way." Anne Jenkins from the Heritage Lottery Fund said, "We're delighted money raised by National Lottery players has been used to fund this incredibly innovative project. using new technologies to uncover the past. It is fantastic this important resource will be accessible to all and allow people to discover little-known artefacts from Sikh and British history.
University pays £2 million on No Talk staff. De Montfort University has spent nearly £2 million on non-disclosure agreements with departing staff members, according to latest figures. The university has released details of payments made to staff since 2015. Non-disclosure agreements, or NDAs, are deals which often involve the financial settlement in return for an agreement from staff not to release sensitive information about their former employers and can be built into redundancy terms. In a response to a Freedom of Information Act inquiry, the university said payments totalling £1,976,736 were made to 58 staff at an average of just over £34,000. No further information about the agreements has been released. Last year, 23 staff left the university, NDAS. A spokeswoman said, "Non-disclosure agreements are jointly negotiated by two parties to protect important and confidential information about a business, including a financial information. The signing of an agreement containing such a clause does not prevent staff from reporting criminal acts to the police or regulatory bodies, or from making a disclosure under the Public Interest Disclosure Act of 1998. NDAs are typically signed off by a chief executive officer or the most senior executive position in an organisation. NDAs are commonly used in the university sector, often to protect research or keep a lid on information that may give a university a competitive advantage over a rival, such as clearance targets and business plans. Research by the University and College Union, UCU, about their use among the elite Russell Group universities, to which De Montfort does not belong, has shown that NDA payments are typically between £20,000 and £40,000. This puts the average De Montfort settlement at the higher end of the scale. However, the UCU said the number of De Montfort NDAs signed is not out of keeping with other universities. Edinburgh University has signed 91 such agreements since 2015, and Sheffield University 500 in the past decade.
Specialist beer shop owners call time in city. A specialist retailer in the city has revealed it is closing for good and is selling off its stock at reduced prices. Brewclopedia in Welford Road announced on social media that it will close permanently this week. The shop, which opened in a former off-licence in March 2017, is known for its range of craft beer, real ale and cider from around the world, but also including many from local producers. The shop's last day of trading will be today, when customers will be able to benefit from a discount of at least 25% off all beers and ciders. The message posted on social media reads, "It is with great sadness we have to announce that we will be closing our doors for the final time. Visit us on Wednesday when we will be open from noon to 6 p.m. and will be holding a stock clearance sale where you can get at least 25% off all beers and ciders. We would like to thank all our customers and staff who have worked with us over the last couple of years. Brewclopedia was launched by the owners of 23 Wine and Whiskey in Granby Street after they successfully introduced some local beers into their range. Such was the response, they decided to open a specialist shop, which aimed to offer something different to the range of beer found in off-licences or supermarkets. You'll find the shop at 31 to 35 Welford Road, Leicester.
Is that on? Councils take control of Bradgate Park. The leaders of the city and county councils have taken control of Bradgate Park to try to improve the way it's run. County Council leader Nick Rushton has teamed up with City Mayor Sir Peter Salisbury to improve the management of the 850-acre country park. Councillor Rushton, who is chairman of the Bradgate Park Trust, said the time was right for a new management strategy, which had included bringing people such as Leicestershire County Council Assistant Director Roderick O'Connor and Anstey Councillor Deborah Taylor onto the board. Councillor Rushton said, "A little while back, Peter Salisbury and I realised Bradgate Park was not delivering for the people of Leicester and Leicestershire, so we are now in control. The whole management of the park will be looked at. It will take a while to do this, but we just thought Bradgate Park Trust was not acting in the best interests of the people of Leicester and Leicestershire. The parking strategy, for instance, has been causing problems in the village of Newtown Linford, and the county council was constantly down there. What it boiled down to was that the parking strategy of the trust was not fit for purpose. We've done a full parking survey, which is now going through various trust committees and will come to a conclusion later this year." He said it was unfair, for instance, for someone walking their dog for half an hour to have to buy a full day's parking ticket, and added that many drivers also like to pay for parking using apps. He said charges need to reflect what people want and stop visitors parking in Newtown Linford. You will get more people paying for parking if the short-term charges are not prohibitive. If you can pay by app, there are not such high costs of collecting and banking cash from machines, which is generally 20% of the money you take. The trust charity raises more than £1 million a year from parking, which goes towards the park's £1.5 million annual costs. About two-thirds of the visitors use the Newtown Linford entrance. Councillor Rushton said he felt the way businesses were approached for payment for using Bradgate images and wording would not have been something he would have agreed to. So he said, "If I'd been in charge at the time, I would have said, don't bother. As far as I can make out, the policy only had reputational downsides. Hopefully, that's out of the window now. People have been putting old John on things like their ties and blazers for years." He said they also wanted to address the way the tea rooms were run and said, "We don't want to make millions, but they can't be subsidised by car parking." On top of that, he said the trust hoped to ensure properties on the estate were properly rented out and the deer stocks are appropriately managed. Councillor Rushton said, "Between the county and city, we have such vast resources that we must be able to run it in a better fashion. There should be no need for the trust to have to buy in services. There's plenty of back office work that can be done by our teams. We want to put it on a sound footing because it's one of the best parks in the whole country." Sir Peter, who's vice chairman of the trust, said the park was a major asset gifted by Sir Charles Bennion, a founder of the British United Shoe Machinery, and it was founded, gifted for the people of Leicester and Leicestershire in 1928. Sir Peter said, "Nick and I have decided the engagement of the city and county is vitally important, so it continues to be loved and cherished for now and generations to come. Traditionally, the two councils have seen the trust as something that happened in the distance, as it were. Both recognise it is such an important asset that we need to make sure it continues to be well supported. I think we both feel the trust has come a long way in the last few years with the visitor facilities and excellent catering, but we recognise that perhaps we've not been there to give it as much support as we could.
Bodybuilder tows 1.7-ton BMW car around former airfield. Ex-Marine Max Glover took on the ultimate fundraising challenge at the weekend by walking a marathon while towing a car. Bodybuilder Max attached himself to the 1.7-ton BMW 525D with a harness and walked the 26.2 miles within 24 hours at the Bruntingthorpe Proving Ground, raising over £1,400 for Royal Brompton and Harefield Hospitals charity. Max only had 13 days to train for the challenge, in addition to his usual bodybuilding routines. He then travelled up to the former airfield near Lutterworth from his home in Cardiff to take on the 24-hour marathon effort. It is not the first epic challenge Max has taken on. In the past, he has carried £200 up and down the highest mountain in southern Britain, completed car deadlifts, and successfully done 1,000 pull-ups. The inspiration behind this challenge comes from Max's good friend Julie, who recently had a lung transplant at Harefield Hospital. The pair met several years ago when Max trained her at their local gym, and then they ended up unexpectedly working together later in life when Max changed jobs. Julie has a rare condition, which means she lacks a protective enzyme inhibitor, which makes her more vulnerable to smoke, dust and other toxic materials, and increases the risk of lung disease. Because of the deficiency, Julie was required to have the lung transplant. Shortly after the transplant, Julie went to lunch with Max, and he was amazed at the transformation. Because I was seeing her every day, I knew her health was declining as a result of the lung disease, but I don't think I was so aware of the extent until I saw her after the operation and how healthy she looked. The pair plan to walk Penyfan, the highest mountain in South Wales, together to raise more money in the future once Julie is well enough. All the proceeds from the day will go towards the charity's pioneering Harefield Transplant Appeal to raise funds for organ care systems to allow more patients to receive life-saving transplants.
Glider forced to land in field. A glider was forced to make an emergency landing in a cornfield close to Gartree Prison over the weekend. The aircraft made the unplanned landing at about 1:15 p.m. on Sunday in a farmer's field off Gallowfield Road, Foxton. Leicestershire Fire and Rescue Service dispatched two engines to the scene over concerns for the pilot's welfare. But when the fire crews arrived, they found nobody had been hurt. A witness to the incident said it was understood that the glider had taken off from nearby Husbands Bosworth, where there is a club at the airfield called the Gliding Centre. He said it was very close to the prison boundary when it came down, short of its landing destination. But the good news is the pilot seemed to be fine and was waiting for the glider to be recovered. It will have raised a few eyebrows inside the prison, though. The fire service said that it had helped with the recovery of the aircraft.
Firefighters delivering safety advice by bike. On-call firefighters are getting out and about on bicycles to offer safety advice. The unique Community Fire Cycle Crew initiative will involve part-time crew members in Melton, Oakham and Uppingham. The on-call firefighters not only give their time to attend emergencies, but also provide the community with a wide range of advice on how they can stay safe. The idea for the initiative came from on-call firefighter Matt McCullen from Melton Fire Station. He said, "The role of a firefighter is changing, and a large proportion of our role now involves key education and prevention work within our communities. By being out and about on our bikes, it makes us highly visible and gives residents the chance to stop and speak to us about any fire or safety concerns they may have. As a team, we hope to build strong links within each of our communities to help us achieve our overall goal of safer people, safer places." The Community Fire Cycle Crew will be offering home safety checks to residents and will fit smoke alarms in homes that do not have them or where they are defective. By going directly into homes to check on their safety, the team members are able to make referrals to partner agency First Contact Plus for those who may need additional support to improve their overall well-being. Another part of the Community Fire Cycle Crew's remit will be to visit youth groups to deliver key water, fire and road safety advice to young people. Matt said, "No matter how small the issue, we want to hear about it so we can help. Whether this is reporting fire safety concerns, such as fly tipping, deliberate fire hotspots, or just referring a friend or neighbour for a home safety check or smoke alarm fitting, please get in touch. Together, we can help to reduce the risk of deliberate and accidental fires in your community." Follow the Community Fire Cycle Crew on Facebook and Twitter at Melton Fire, LFRS Oakham and LFRSU Uppingham.
I'll fight airport parking fine. A woman has vowed to fight the £100 fine she received when she went to collect her daughter at East Midlands Airport. Ruth Pickering was filling her car with petrol at the fuel station in the Castle Donington Airport grounds when her daughter arrived from a holiday in Barcelona. Her daughter met her at the garage just as she was paying for petrol. She put her suitcase in the boot of the car and they left. Mrs. Pickering said she then received a £60 enforcement notice for stopping in a zone where stopping is prohibited. She was sent CCTV images of her daughter loading the case into the boot. The notice said that the fine would rise to £100 if not paid in 14 days. The airport said the petrol station is enforced to stop people parking there while waiting for arrivals and avoiding the waiting fee. Mrs. Pickering from Nottingham said, "No way am I paying it. I'll go to court. I drop my daughter off at Birmingham Airport and they have a half-hour drop-off point." She came back from Barcelona to East Midlands. "It was a girl's trip and she's 22. I was intending to go into the car park, but my fuel was low, so I thought I'd go to the garage." She said her daughter could not find her mum outside arrivals and called her dad, who directed her to the garage forecourt where her mum was paying for petrol. She said an appeal against the penalty has been dismissed. Mrs. Pickering said, "I was using the facilities. I was not just sitting there at the petrol station. I'm furious. It's just disgusting. It is a money-making scheme. I had to stop to put fuel in. I think the 10-minute drop-off points should be free. If Birmingham can do it, it's not asking a lot. These people prey on the weak. I have never been fined or gone to court in my life, and this has stressed me out. It has made me think twice about going to the airport." A spokesman for the airport said, Parking or waiting on roads across the airport estate has always been prohibited. While this was previously indicated by double yellow lines, all roads are now red routed and are enforced by a third party. The same compliance company also has a separate agreement in place with the petrol station. The safety of people visiting and working on the airport site is our number one priority. More than 8,000 people are employed across the airport estate, and thousands of passengers arrive and depart each day from the airport. Everyone who comes to the airport needs to be safe. Controlling traffic flow on the roads throughout the site is key to ensuring people's safety and enjoyment of visiting East Midlands Airport. The vehicles waiting in undesignated parking areas when dropping off and collecting passengers not only causes congestion, but is dangerous for both drivers and pedestrians.
Daisy, age 10, takes first prize. A primary school pupil has won the top prize in National Careers Contest with a heartfelt message to NHS staff. Daisy Curran was crowned national winner of Health Education England's Step Into the NHS Primary School Competition. The 10-year-old produced a booklet saying thank you to the NHS, along with a poem and a comic strip showing her knowledge about NHS jobs. Daisy joined fellow pupils from Brox Hill Primary School in Leicester in a photo shoot to show their appreciation for the health service. The contest aimed to raise awareness about the breadth of roles in the health service, raise aspirations and challenge gender stereotypes. This is the first year that Step Into the NHS has been rolled out in primary schools, following a successful 10 years operating in secondary schools. A delighted Daisy said, "Taking part in Step Into the NHS was a fantastic experience. I really enjoyed learning about the different jobs in the NHS and creating my booklet to say thank you. I'm very proud to have won the national competition." Sim Street of Brox Hill Primary School said, "When I started to receive the children's competition entries, I felt incredibly proud of the work they had produced. So many heartfelt messages showing how valued the NHS is by our school community." Daisy spent a considerable amount of time on her entry, and I knew it was worth the wait when I saw it. I'm delighted she's been recognised for her hard work. Schools were given free educational resources explaining a variety of NHS jobs, from nurses and surgeons to IT professionals and scientists. Pupils explored the past, present and future of the NHS and its careers, culminating in them designing a piece of artwork expressing thanks to the NHS and its staff. The competition received 629 entries from schools across England. Michelle Walton, head teacher at Brox Hill Primary School, said, "We work incredibly hard at Brox Hill to ensure that our children develop as global citizens. Daisy's entry was particularly impressive because she demonstrated her different experiences with the NHS, not just the work that they do, but also their commitment to gender equality and the variety of roles available. We are very proud of Daisy's achievement and how well she has represented herself and our school." Professor Ian Cumming, Chief Executive at Health Education England, said, "Inspiring the next generation of NHS staff has never been more important, and Step Into the NHS supports this by showcasing its fantastic careers. I'm delighted to see how many entries the first year of the primary school competition has received. The children have been so creative, and I'm especially encouraged by the grasp they have shown of the wide range of jobs within the health service." Daisy and seven other regional winners from across England have been awarded Amazon vouchers.
61 turned away during district's vote ID trial. More than 60 people were turned away from a polling station in a voter identification pilot scheme. North West Leicestershire District Council was asked to participate in an initiative to try to combat electoral fraud in May's local election. For the first time, voters were told they would not be able to cast a ballot if they did not bring their polling cards or other qualifying forms of ID with them to show to officials at each station. Polling cards are posted to every person on the electoral register. Government figures show 61 people attempted to vote in North West Leicestershire but could not because they did not have suitable identification. The council said that 61 was a tiny fraction of the 18,000 who voted in the district, where the turnout was 32%. The council's opposition Labour group said it was still concerned that people were denied their votes. Labour's councillor, Dave Bigby, said some of the council wards were decided by a handful of votes, so the denied ballots could have been crucial. He said, "The official figures only show those people who were denied a vote because they turned up at the polling station without the correct ID and were unable to return. No one knows how many were put off going to vote altogether, having mislaid their polling card. We say that this is an expensive solution to a non-existent problem and will only serve to discourage participation in our democracy and make the electorate unnecessarily suspicious of the validity of elections." Council Chief Executive Bev Smith said, "The voter ID pilot required voters to bring their poll card with them when they voted, and we are pleased that the vast majority did that. A few hundred people brought along another form of identity, which was accepted, and only 61 people out of more than 18,000 people were unable to vote. When we were talking to people during our awareness campaign, many people thought that the poll card was already required to vote. We were pleased to take part in the pilot to inform the Cabinet Office decision on voter ID and thank people in North West Leicestershire for their input. We will now wait for a decision on whether the ID will be a requirement in future elections and what form that will be."
1 year ago today, three generations of a family were hit by a car. Today they tell how they were plunged into a nightmare. A family knocked down as they walked along a city street by an out-of-control car a year ago today have spoken out about the effect it has had on their lives. Sylvia Banks, 77, her husband Peter, their granddaughter Abigail, 27, and great-grandson Callum, now 9, were walking along Mansfield Street towards St Margaret's bus station when they were hit from behind. Peter and Sylvia suffered broken bones, Abigail torn ligaments. Sylvia said, "It's changed all of our lives. I used to visit the gym several times a week, but that's over now." Peter said, "It's as if someone flicked a switch and we went from being happy one minute to sad. It had been such a lovely day and then turned into a nightmare." The couple filed a formal complaint against the police after discovering no criminal charges were brought against the driver. Peter said, "Surely mounting a pavement and mowing down three generations of a family counts as dangerous driving. It's careless at the very least. We don't want this person to be hung, drawn and quartered, but there should be some form of punishment, but a driver improvement course, seriously. We feel let down by police." A police spokesman said, "Following an investigation, it was determined the standard of driving did not meet the criteria for a charge of dangerous driving. On this occasion, the driver had no previous offences and was of previous good character. Therefore, the most appropriate course of action was for the driver to attend a driver improvement course. Mr. and Mrs. Banks contacted the Mercury because they wanted to say a big thank you to the people who helped them at the crash scene. Sylvia said, "I can remember a man holding a blue umbrella over me and a lady kindly keeping me awake. I felt myself losing consciousness several times." But she kept on saying, "Stay with us, Sylvia. Everything is going to be okay. I know there were other people there helping my family, to whom I am extremely grateful." The couple also thanked firefighters, medics, hospital staff, and everyone else for their help and kindness on the day and since.
Sporting greats gathered together in their thousands. The glory days of sporting battles of yesteryear and the feats of heroes who took part were revisited during a history display and talk. Leicestershire County Cricket Club's Fisher County Ground in Grace Road hosted the charity evening, which was organised and presented by Leicester sports aficionado and memorabilia collector Roy Hathaway. About 25,000 cigarette and trade cards were on display alongside an original FA Cup final programme from 1949 when the Foxes were beaten 3-1 by Wolverhampton Wanderers. Famous footballers featured on the cigarette and trade cards: Dixie Dean, a prolific goal scorer for Everton and England in the interwar years; Stoke City and England great Sir Stanley Matthews. Many Leicester City players were also represented, including Sepp Smith, who made 350 appearances for the club between 1929 and 1949, scoring 35 goals. His exploits also saw him earn an England cap in 1935. Cricketing icons included W.G. Grace, one of the sport's pioneers and most famous England players, and Australian cricket legend Sir Donald Bradman. Charles de Trafford, who represented Leicestershire County Cricket Club from 1894 until 1920, also featured on one of the cards. The evening concluded with a quiz on Leicester City players and Leicestershire County cricketers from 1900 to 1950. Proceeds from the event went to Cancer Research UK.
Opening date for new Matalan City store. Shoppers in Leicester will have a new store to visit next month. The fashion and homeware retailer Matalan is opening a branch in the Haymarket Shopping Centre. The retailer, which already has a branch in Churchgate in the city centre, is opening in the unit formerly occupied by clothing seller Profile. The Haymarket branch is due to open on Saturday, September 7th. The unit currently remains surrounded by boards while work goes on inside. Matalan was founded in 1985 in Preston, Lancashire, and now has 230 UK stores and 30 international franchise stores in Europe and the Middle East. According to the retailer's website, it aims to provide the highest quality clothing and homeware for the lowest price. It sells clothing for men, women and children, as well as homeware ranging from suitcases to dinner sets. Matalan, which also has a branch at Beaumont Lees, will join the likes of H&M, Pandora, Primark and TK Maxx in the Haymarket.
Mixing up traditional recipes gives Jackie top taste of success. A handcraft food business, which started life in a family kitchen last year, is going from strength to strength, thanks to the owner's unique spin on the traditional Scotch egg, including a version rolled in Bombay mix. Jackie Williamson launched Nonny's Family Kitchen from her home in South Leicestershire in 2018, producing gourmet Scotch eggs, muffins and scones, and priding herself on using free-range eggs and locally sourced ingredients. It has been such a success that in the past 6 months her Scotch egg production has grown from 40 to 500 a week, and the business has taken on its first member of staff. Jackie sells her food to other businesses that share her passion for quality food and members of the public, and supplies vegetarian, vegan and gluten-free alternatives from her home in Broughton Astley. She started making Scotch eggs after getting fed up with the lack of healthy, savoury alternatives while she was on a diet. They were so popular with friends and family that when she lost her job supporting adult carers last autumn, she started selling them at craft fairs. They all use locally sourced pork sausage meat, baked crumbs and free-range eggs from a nearby farm, as well as a traditional variety using herbs from her own garden. She has created a chorizo egg, fine orange crumbs mixed with paprika, sausage chips and beans version in potato chip stick crumb, and a Bombay egg, which are available in pork, vegan or vegetarian, made with spices and rolled in Bombay mix. She said, despite her success, she has no plans for mass production as she wants to maintain a personal touch. Jackie has been helped by the Collaborate Business Support Project, run by Leicester City Council on behalf of a consortium of public and private sectors, backed by the European Regional Development Fund. One of the partners, the East Midlands Food Drink Forum, has given her free advice with things such as getting her hazard analysis and critical control point certificate so that she can continue to supply businesses such as micropubs, delis, butchers and garden centres. She is the first person to get approval for making products using eggs and meat in her own home kitchen in Leicestershire, and things are going so well that she has just taken on her daughter Gemma as her first employee. Jackie has also been invited to go to the House of Commons in October with a delegation of other food and drink businesses, a visit organised by Harborough District Council to showcase what the area has to offer. She said, although I love selling to the public, it's wonderful working with other business people who often have that special appreciation for good quality food and drink. Although my kitchen has a 5-star hygiene rating, it's much more complicated when dealing business to business over a certain percentage of sales rather than the public. The red tape has been phenomenal, and I had to get help if I was going to trade with other businesses. The support from Collaborate means I can trade confidently with any size organisation, knowing that I have all the right legislation in place. Jignes Parekh, technical assistant at the Food and Drink Forum, said Nonny's Family Kitchen had a few challenges for the approval process with the council in order to start trading business to business, but we enabled the business to put together all the documentation to meet the requirements and to advise Jackie on the various food safety criteria for Scotch egg manufacturing. I am really pleased that the business has gained the approval with the council and is growing.
We have now reached the end of the Leicester Mercury Talking newspaper. If you wish to contact the Sound Services Department of Vista, please telephone the Vista helpline on 0116 249 8839. So from me, Mary, goodbye.
And Marion, goodbye.
Margaret, goodbye.
And Eleanor, goodbye.
Thank you, Ian, for recording this.